So Roxanne is here for two more hours. So, Bert, do we do Zappa? Do we do a new topic? What do we do? Do other people want to do a topic? What do we do?
We could do a very short subject.
What does Roxanne want to do?
You want to update Zappa?
Sprechstimme.
Okay. What are you saying? Oh, Sprechstimme. Okay, Sprechstimme.
No.
All right. So.
Yes, because I think besides his compositions, actually many people know him for what he said. So
yes, that's right. His interviews. Yeah. If you point that out about Frank, that his talking was as much of his composing as his instrumental work, that prepares the ground for me being the greatest musician who ever lived, right? Because I can claim my talking is part of my composition. Zappa
yes,
is precedent for that.
And even William Thompson also sees, in a way, this type of discourse as a big musical composing.
Yes, Thompson calls his work mind jazz. So he's got the musical term there, jazz, and he says he's a new kind of poet. I would see him as anticipating me. Yep. He's a talker, musician, / talker. Is that what you're saying, Rox?
Yes.
Yeah. And LaRouche is a conceptualist. He would not say he's doing music, but he talks a lot about music, talks a lot about culture, an integrated view of culture. Definitely LaRouche barely makes the cut, but he's in there. And then McLuhan definitely said the word was music. McLuhan considered his verbal performances music, and Jean Baudrillard said that. You have to give Baudrillard credit.
And he uses the term alia da capo.
Who uses
when,
the term?
When you say,
who does?
Irving William Thompson. It's a musician.
Not Irving William Thompson. It's William Irwin.
Yes, I'm joking.
Oh, you're joking. Yeah, Bert, she has a new name for him, Irving William Thompson.
I
heard her say it earlier.
We had to correct the 40 videotapes. We had to correct the words. And she had Irving William Thompson, every one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's my personal joke.
Yes, that's good. We get it. We're all enjoying it. Much hilarity is spread throughout the universe due to that joke.
Yes, he says, history is like a aria da capo. Da capo means that you go back to the beginning.
Okay.
So this is again the repentance and the metanoia that we look back.
We look back. Yes.
That means da capo too. When you play something and it says da capo, you go back.
Right. Now, does Zappa say the word da capo? Or Thompson does?
Well, Thompson.
Thompson does,
that's
I'm pretty sure.
The musical term.
Yes, he uses that term. Yeah, I have it in my notes.
Going in all directions.
Yes.
It's not, one might think it's only going linear.
Okay, your voice is borderline.
Music, you have the...
Good.
The da capo, that you means...
Keep yelling like
go
that.
Go back
that's
to
perfect.
The beginning.
Oh, my God, that's so good. I can make out what she's saying. Keep it going.
Yes, and in a way, that's what Joyce is doing in The Finnegan's Wake.
Yes.
When he uses all languages and goes da capo,
yeah,
he makes this big composition. And actually, it's what Thompson would like to do. That he says we should see history as a big novel with no omissions, and education should not be about the nationality.
But right.
One should study how conscience evolved through time.
He calls it the satellite view. He calls it, which is where he is in my chart. He's a satellite / computer. But yes, he advocates a satellite view of the drift and interaction of all the cultures around the planet. So you would
and speaking, translate this evolution of conscience of humanity, and also when one is growing up, one develops this
basis.
Yes, connections, and one knows more. And he says it's not about knowing dates and facts, but about knowing the whole piece of music and go in da capo and in all directions. Integrate everything.
That would be the third Copernican revolution, the revolution of pattern recognition. That's what Thompson's for, pattern recognition.
Mm.
Now, I could take the chart. Let's see. We could go through this a bit. The first, he has kindergarten and then grade one, grade two. And they relate to the Australopithecus ramapithecus, the ape, the hominization phase. Do you know what I mean? Before we were human beings. Before we were human. Hmm. He sees the kindergarten. Let me just go get the chart. It's a good time to bring it in and go through that. But I'm going to play a little music. Oh, unless you guys, Bert, you can talk. Talk to Roxy or anybody else. Talk.
We can talk about how Zappa actually, his agenda was to educate people. He said,
yes,
they listen to bad music because that's what they get in the media. But he had a higher agenda, and it was not only his music compositions that he was putting out, but also his ideas and his discourse. He was explaining many things he was doing in music by talking.
You're saying his music was talking? Did you say his music was talking or teaching? Is that what you're saying, Roxanne?
That for him, it was also very important not only to compose, but
yeah,
to express himself, and that's why he was a big defender of the First Amendment.
Right.
Freedom of expression.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yes, I think it's very interesting just to listen to Frank Zappa. And now there's a new documentary, Eat That Question, where he's just talking.
Is it on the net? Have you seen that? Eat That Question? Have you seen the movie?
No, just
clips from it?
Interviews from the director.
Oh, okay.
He's a German guy, and some trailers. It's only interviews. It's only Frank.
Yeah, Bert, let me say this. There's no way Gail, well, now I guess Ahmet, will let it get out on the YouTube and be available for free. It's circulating It's circulating in cinemas all over the States right now. It's going to be in Honolulu next week. So it's getting quite widely distributed. But what's interesting to me, I have to try to find it. Did you hear me mention how Michael Blake Reed talked about this 20 years ago?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, he came up. I don't know. I was talking to him about, this is after Zappa died, and I was talking to Zappa. And then Michael came out, and in his impressions, or just he had an idea, he says, I don't know if Evergreen said this or he did, that they're going to put out a documentary. And he said this 22 years ago. And it'll just be Frank talking, and it'll be a big hit because he's such a great talker. And it never happened back then, but now it is happening. But that could be to give the Evergreens an alibi. They saw all time, so what's 22 years? They just saw it happening. But definitely Frank talking would be part of his composition, composing, which is what Roxy's saying. And he's you're saying he had an educational mandate, Roxy, to move people beyond the conventional pablum they're fed. And then
one of the things Thompson shows is how that the thunders, the mediums, change not only the perception, but the spirituality, the mathematics, and the concept of individual and how the individual relates to the whole.
Right. Mm. Oh, I didn't finish that. When I was explaining the archetypal object, so that the arithmetic revering early ancient cultures, the object was the list, like they list a lot in the Old Testament. But we learn from iron, that's generations of chemistry in our products. And then you have the geometric mentality, and their archetypal object is the temple. I didn't finish that. The algebraic, the archetypal object is the esoteric code. The archetypal object in the Galilean dynamic, that would be 1500 to 1945, the industrial era, was the movement of currencies and ballistics. That was the archetypal object. But what's interesting in the final phase, the present phase, the Pacific phase, he calls it, or Pacific airspace, or biospheric, noetic, planetary noetic polity, what is the esoteric, what is the archetypal object? Self-consciousness. So then, why self-consciousness? But then when you look at his curriculum for the kids, from kindergarten to grade 11 or 12, the kid becomes integrated, has an integral awareness, ideally, if they went through the schooling correctly and profited from it, they would arrive at a state of self-consciousness. So you relate the stages of ontogeny, of the individual development, to the goal of getting some kind of self-consciousness. I don't think he means simple self-consciousness. It means an awareness from probing social mortar and culture around the planet through the educational courses from the satellite
and
view.
And he shows how the evolution of humanity shows this development of consciousness.
Yes, yeah.
From the Neolithic to the modern times, or to the now.
Right, so let me give you the chart. So I've got my Thompson. These are the Thompson charts I used to memorize. I memorized them all, so I don't carry them around with me, but they're all wrinkled from getting water on them. But he starts off the curriculum from ages 5 to 16. And the kindergarten, which is harmonization, which is, I think it was the Australopithecus or Ramapithecus. This is pre-hominid ape. Where's the title? Just bring that up so you can get it correctly. Yeah, he has apes started off in the forest, what's called the Sylvan, S-I-L-V-A-N period, pre-hominid evolution of the Ramapithecus. Then it goes to the apes are kicked out of the forest, so they're out in the prairies or plains, or they're by the edges of lakes, or they're on the coasts of oceans. And that's Australopithecus to Homo erectus. Then the third phase is the glacial or ice age phase, when we go from, the evolution goes from archaic Homo sapiens to modern Homo sapiens. Now you take those first three phases, that's kindergarten, the first grade, and second grade. So his definition of the first class, kindergarten, is the creation. The theme is the creation, the vast elemental forces of light and dark, high and low, visible and invisible. Now he does in coming into being, he goes into the development of the spirochete, early, you know, very tiny organisms and how they flight, whether fight or flight, and these basic reactions which leads to light and dark, high and low, visible and invisible. And so the parallel are, the lesson plans for kids in kindergarten are not mediated through abstract instruction, reading, or computer applications. Rather, after the insights of Montessori and Rudolf Steiner, all ideas are implicit within concrete, sensual, kinesthetic, and visionary experience. So the children would engage in song, dance, storytelling, play, walks in the woods and along the shore. So this wandering around, sort of like in a Garden of Eden free, is the Australopithecus phase. You get that? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes, and it's very interesting how he explains after the medieval, I think it's the algebraic.
The what? No, I didn't get that. The minimal.
Medieval.
Medieval. Medieval.
Yes, the individual, it's aware of the importance of his opinion, and the French Revolution comes, and also the economy changes. That's another thing he talks about, how the trade and the different types of money change also with the different stages.
Right. Let me just say this. I said Australopithecus. It's Ramapithecus, the first phase in the forest, the pre-hominid evolution, and that's kindergarten. But what it's interesting how Coker takes McLuhan, and McLuhan will just say, well, the big change was print. Well, Thompson brings in the concepts, the fads, the philosophers, the artists of the period, fills in more cultural detail.
Yeah.
That's why he calls it culture ecology, not media ecology. So then once you know the more detailed overview of Thompson, you go back and you look at McLuhan's Understanding of Media with 33 chapters, then you see that McLuhan was talking symbolically. That was the new esoteric code, was the way he laid out the history of media. You see what I mean?
Hmm.
It wasn't this esoteric,
yes,
abstract Kabbalah code. It was media environments themselves, because he does say he writes cartoons. He never said that he was a historian or a detailed person. He wrote broad outlines, and he called them cartoons,
yeah,
and they're symbolic cartoons. You know what I mean? Symbolism,
yeah,
metaphysical. They represent phases of awareness. And that's how you juggle Thompson versus McLuhan, is that Thompson actually, with a more broad, less satirical mind, lays out an inventory of cultural developments all over the planet, and that becomes educational, so to speak, right? Cultural content,
yes,
educational.
It's refreshing to read. It's really refreshing.
Yeah.
With the revolution, the republic brings the vote. So the individual has this power with his elections. And Zappa was very into the vote,
yeah,
to making people vote, because for him that was an expression of your elections, of your choices, how you want to program the environment.
Okay, let me respond to that, Roxy. So McLuhan would say the printing press was a big deal for the Renaissance. And then he says, in the Enlightenment, you bring in the newspaper. So he says, okay, the newspaper has many book pages. So that created a more emotional multitude. That created the idea of democracy and the French and American revolutions. But look at the way Thompson does it. Thompson does a little more detail. This is the 10th grade, and he calls it Revolution and the Rise of the Individual. And that's 1688. That's when William of Orange came over and took over England on behalf of the Amsterdam banks, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are they? The Dutch. So the Dutch take over London banking, 1688. So from 1688 to 1851, in comes mercantilism, the rise of the middle class, and the rise of the individual, and no more the church dominating, no more a feudal situation. So in these notes that I made copies of, look at his inventory. So in this period, the 10th grade for kids, which is, he has his topics for science in the courses. The elements are taken from biology, genetics, thermodynamics, psychology, biochemistry, neurophysiology, and cognitive science. That is what's developed in the 19th century, or in this period, 1688 to 1851. And that's the kind of stuff that the kids learn in grade 10, or they start to get that. But here's the way he describes it. The archetypal idea of grade 9 is movement. Now we're in grade 10. In grade 10, it is time. Now, of course, Ion would say, the Ion curriculum would come in and say, well, we don't even have time, right? But before Ion,
yes,
you have Thompson. He says, in grade 10, it is time as opposed to space or movement in grade 9. In grade 10, he defines time as that intense sense of contemporaneity that impels the idea of revolution. The expansion of European civilization into the New World brings with it a new expansion and empowerment of the middle class. With the democratization of information through printing, the priest and the knight no longer hold the traditional structure of civilization. The scientist, the inventor, and the artist become new charismatic embodiments of a time of change. The dissenting minister with his congregation, the scientist and inventor with their learned societies, the revolutionary with his pamphlets and printing press, and the artist as a charismatic genius with his own following all create a new cultural myth of individuality that transforms the millennial-old formats of domination and governance. Now, here's the part I was going to do when, Roxy, you were bringing in the French Revolution. Look at this is a more broader view. He goes, when you he gives the inventory, the theory of that period for the classroom for that whole year, 10th grade, the practice would be, this is what you would do in detail. You would study the interrelationship between the English Revolution, that's Cromwell, that's 1649 to Charles I's beheading, about 1660. So the interrelationship between the English Revolution, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Revolution, the American and French Revolutions, and the European Revolutions of 1848. All of those in creating a new global political culture.
Yes, and also a new type of artist.
Yes,
because,
a new type of artist.
We already talked about how Mozart was the prototype for Frank Zappa.
Yes.
He was the first one that organizes his own concert in public spaces. He doesn't just want to play his music for the elite.
Right.
And the philosophers in Paris, they start organizing themselves and going to the cafes. There is one cafe in Paris called the Procop.
The what? The Co-Cup? It was called the Procop.
Procop. It's a coffee house in Paris, still exists. And, and all the philosophers went there and wrote their many of the papers that became so famous were written in the cafe. And for the first time, normal little men could publish, just like Mozart was organizing concerts. These people were publishing, not only, before it was only the church and the king, and now they have their little cassettes.
Right, he has here the descending minister with his congregation, the scientist and inventor with their learned societies, and the revolutionary with his pamphlets and printing press. You're talking about the revolutionary with his pamphlets. So you said art changes. So under practice, there's another section called Integrated Studies Project. So look what he has. He says, first you study the revolution in painting known as portraiture, and how that emphasized the individual. So he has portraiture and individuation. Then he has art and electricity, subtitled The Case of Frankenstein. So the whole story around Frankenstein, you know, Mary, was it Wollstonecraft? Mary Shelley, I get them mixed up. One of those Marys wrote the novel on Frankenstein.
Mary Shelley.
That is art, new art, or art, painting, sculpture, music, dealing with electricity. So it says, art and electricity, the case of Frankenstein. Then it says, the romantic artist as shaman and prophet, the case of Beethoven. So Beethoven.
Yes, and, we already talked about this, how the new mediums are always in, like, the bad, the monster, the evil thing.
Yeah.
The description of the old.
Yeah, the new is always appears evil at first. Like, the Vikings were an evil invading force, you know, before the Renaissance, but they represented the moving out across the Atlantic Ocean that was going to come with the post-printing press era, the moving out of the Mediterranean. So the Vikings showed a movement. They went around invading everybody all over the Atlantic Ocean. That was an enunciation of evil. No, that was evil enunciating the pattern that everybody would be doing. So what is the pattern today that looks evil that people will be doing normally?
Bob.
Yes, Bob, but Bob's a very, very, very conscious version of it. But what I'd say the evil today is terrorism.
Yeah,
the individual anarchist.
Yes.
That Donald Trump is an individual anarchist. Did you hear Ian talk about it? The Republican Party will not fund him. Unfortunately for them, he doesn't need their fucking money. So he's becoming the third party dream. Right?
Yes.
Just by himself.
I mean, LaRouche goes a little further in this than Thompson, but he sees into what we call the secret societies and the power behind the throne.
LaRouche writes about Martin, the Martin family. So there's the key people, and he names it. Thompson doesn't do that.
And the Templars and weird connections in economy and
right
the events.
Well, I'm glad you see that. That's what you do. You do a little Thompson, then you jump over and get some extra kind of details in LaRouche.
Yes, and then you go to Bob because you...
I already know it all.
You are doing with your chart.
Get the link.
I did it all.
Homeopathic.
Yeah, I take it further.
The homeopathic view, and this brought you first two sources, like LaRouche and what
Croker,
the wonderful woman.
May Brussel,
that were more in the knowing of things that the common man doesn't see the patterns.
Right.
But you went even further. You went to the evergreens and then to iron to get really the hidden ground of all this evolution of.
It was my band. My band was made up of May LaRouche, Thompson, Croker, the evergreens. Then became a great epic. What would it be with Ion? A rock band? A hip hop? Fucking, we're all of it. We're all of it with Ion, all kinds of music.
Yes, and with the revolution, the boat becomes the expression of taking your power back.
Which is what trumps the boat. Trumps the boat that ideologically in an American context, and he's miming the terrorist. The terrorist is a guy, you know. Apparently, these terrorists they operate on their own cells, right? They just. Form their own resources and blow something up as and claim they're part of some movement.
Yes, and for example, the time people like Delacroix and David, they used to work for the church, and they have also very important works of religious.
You're talking about David, the artist?
Yeah, and they were the ones that had the idea to make the Louvre public.
Right.
Because until then, only the super elite had access to the art that was not in the church.
Yeah, what's the name of the guy? What's the name of the guy who led the terrorists for 9/11? Forget his name. It's not Obama. Is it like Obama?
Osama bin Laden.
Bin Laden did David. He says, okay, we're terrorists. And we open it up to anybody can join our movement on your own. We don't even know about you. He opened terrorism to the public. He democratized it, like David democratized the museum, the art world, by making the Louvre.
Yes, and so that's the first opening. Like,
yes.
We say the Louvre means to open, ouvrir. So they opened these archives of encoded knowledge and there are many levels
But here's the thing, McLuhan would come in and say their goals to open to the public created effects that they didn't foresee, mix it in with the printing press and the newspaper and the public getting educated on that level leads to political revolutions which the David they may not have meant. They thought the museum would make people aware of some kind of secret esoteric code or something, but they didn't know that there would be this accumulated synergistic effect of all the media of the time leading to chaos and the French Revolution and then the Jacobean Terror and then the demise of France and the rise of England and, you know, in the 1800s and the rise of the Rothschilds. Every little group that did something through history did not see the effects of the media until the 20th century, till Toronto School, the School of Toronto Communication. They're the first post-Freemason, post-esoteric code, new kind of secret knowledge, dealing with the public environments of media. And seeing through those was the new code. And that's what I did.
It's very interesting that, in a way, artists, from that time, I think artists also have to be engaged and have to serve the people and educate the people. So they start making public art like Delacroix.
Delacroix, yeah. Or or
it's propaganda.
There's another guy, Corot, is it? C-O-R-O-T. He did a lot of populist, maybe even socialistic painting. He would show the peasants. Is his name Corot? No, it might be another name. Famous guy in the middle of the 19th century. He started painting the peasants, and that was radical.
And then George with Ulysses had to get to create this work of art to make the public be treated like adults, because before things were only done for, I think, for a person that is 8 years old. The level of conscience of
right.
Of the creation.
By opening up the pornography front. Freedom of speech.
Well, not only pornography, but eroticism.
Right. To allow topics to be for the little man, the working
yeah,
class
grown
man
up,
to read.
That the public could discuss all types of things.
Right.
Not
you get that, Bert?
Without
Joyce led a political revolution. He sacrificed his own
yes.
book to go through the courts. So that then they won the case, and then they couldn't censor. But then censorship comes in 50 years later in the 80s with the Christian fundamentalists taking over the American education system and want to bring back creationism and suppress Darwin. There's a new dynamic, a new cause for a new kind of suppression. Or
and this is something that really affected Zappa.
Yes,
in
yeah.
a personal way.
Yeah. In his biography... autobiography, he talks about after getting let out of jail in April 1965, he leaves Cucamonga, they've destroyed his studio, so he moves to L.A. And he says the first area he lived in, he's sort of a nobody in L.A., even though he record executives know him because he'd been submitting music for a while out of a studio, Cucamonga studio, but he says his first encounter with L.A. was a fundamentalist evangelical church in his neighborhood, and he used to go and watch the guy, and he used to get really pissed off at how the evangelist was fooling the people. And that became a major motif in his own political mandate, was to wake people up to this con game they were getting from the religious world. So in that sense, that's what I mean, Roxy, is that, yes, he was pissed off, and he cites this particular church he witnessed when he first got to L.A. that really got him... what do they say? He got a craw in his mouth, craw in his jaw about it. He got upset about it. Didn't like the ripoff. He couldn't believe these people were so stupid for this guy, for the Avenger.
And also, because Joyce saw that here comes everybody, that the new man is going to start producing.
Yes.
And
producing media poetry.
Public.
Now, here's an interesting point. When Zappa got on Crossfire and CNN, Pat Buchanan, who leads the conservative Christian guys, he's a respectable political columnist who represents them, he claimed, there's Zappa arguing with him, and he said, you, Zappa, claim we suppress you. No, you suppress us. And he made a big point out of Zappa was leading a movement to suppress them. they said, which is interesting. Like Frank, he thought he was liberating the people, from the stupidity of literal translations of the Bible, but the world had become so decentralized and all kinds of little tribes, nano-communities, nano-tribes could form up, that the religious right formed a nano-tribe and says, we have the right to be stupid. We have the right to study the Bible and take it literally. Fuck you, Frank. You're not suppressing us. So they had a counterpoint, you know? Like, hey, Frank, you can complain about us, but don't try to stop us. Now, Frank says, well, no, I object you guys not being taxed. This bullshit that you guys get free from being taxed because you're some fucking special religion, I'm against that. So he formed a church. Zappa formed a church called CASH, C-A-S-H, Church of American Secular Humanism. Church for of Secular American Humanism. Did I get that right? No. Okay. Church of American, Secular Humanism, C-A-S-H. Whatever it is, registered in Alabama and some of these states to argue in the courts against these churches that were not paying taxes. He actually went real political about it. But then they murdered him. They won. They murdered Frank. So
yes.
We're now stuck with 20. We were stuck with 20 years of fundamentalism because Frank got beat.
Yes, they're bringing us to the now, like...
The now? Oh, don't like, bring in the now. The now. It's wobbly. What now? Now? Or now? Now?
Which now? Now.
the discussion in the public forum now is crap.
Yes.
Trump is saying stupid things and things and this and that. But it's like you said, where does freedom stop? And
are you making a question? You're saying Trump is the topic, and where freedom?
One is for these values of free expression, and but as you say, people have also the right to express.
Yes.
Stupid things.
Well, McLuhan said that we will not be able to resolve the conflicting claims of cultures around the world. Every culture says they're the greatest, they did this, they did that, and that's never going to be resolved. But that argument, they call political correctness or cultural correctness, is what makes wealth today. The books, the media, the movies, the entertainment are all about the issues in the culture wars. So that's rearview mirror, old content, making wealth, or making obsolete wealth, which means more and more people get wealthy because it's obsolete. It's not constitutive. So McLuhan said, okay, we can't solve the conflicting claims. So he comes in with another level called media ecology, showing a deeper ground to culture, a deeper causative factor. That's where he tried to integrate on a level bypassing the culture wars that he saw coming.
Yes, and for example, for Irving.
Irving. Yeah, Irving Bill.
William. I posted in the video, one of the last we did, the latest post by Thompson in his blog, a poem and the story of capitalism.
Yes.
All these wonderful things talking about in transforming history leads to Trump.
Yes.
He had this wonderful view of universal conscience.
Who? Thompson did.
Yes.
Yes.
And then where are we now?
Well, Thompson, he bemoans that. He says, oh, shit, we're going into a dark age. And then he goes, oh, yeah, there always was a dark age whenever there was a new breakthrough. So he goes back to 9500 B.C., and I guess coming out of the Ice Age, there was a dark age. Then he calls it the Kurgan invasions around 4500 B.C. That was another dark age. Then he goes to 1450, the Aegean Dark Ages, where everybody was on the move, and volcanoes and stuff. I guess that'd be Pompeii, things like that. And Moses was part of that, the Exodus. So that's the Dark Ages of 1450, the Aegean Dark Ages. And then he says there's the European Dark Ages, about 500 A.D. That's after the collapse of Rome and before the Renaissance. And then he says we're in a dark age now after the breakthrough of electronic technology. So you have this burst forth of a new technology, new environment, new medium, or a new bunch of media, what I call a new mythic stage, and it always has a backlash, a several hundred year period of dark ages. So that's what he, you know, you're saying he saw this great planetary ecology, planetary culture, noetic polity coming in, and then he has to look at Trump. And he can't see the services of Trump. He only sees humanist negativity in Trump. So he gets depressed and makes his pattern about dark ages. I would say that we're...
And to explain Trump in one of his last posts, the one I put on the video, he does this big metanoia of economy.
Of the what? The metanoia of the common?
Of the economy, of different types of...
Economy.
Economy. Currencies.
Right.
because like many, they put the blame on the financial systems and the ways we are abusing the planet and exploding people and yeah, engaging the media.
No. Make your mic. Your mic's fading out. Yell and scream louder.
Yeah, most people engage media not to really educate themselves. And
no, they want to validate what they already think. They want to confirm what they already think.
They're into violence and porn and commercial low culture.
Yeah, the right-wingers say, shit, they're into Zappa. And then Zappa and the lefties say, oh, shit, they're into Christian music. See, everybody hates everybody else's music.
No, they're into Trump.
What did you say about Trump?
Yeah, I mean,
his name is so
because the president. So,
I mean, Trump is trumping everybody. He's trumping everybody.
Yes, but it's like there is this myth in Babylon where the king Gilgamesh is so powerful, some gods create like a devil,
right,
to fight him.
That's right.
And
fight
they fight
Gilgamesh.
Each other, but none of them can win. So
they all fight each other in fighting Gilgamesh.
Yeah, Gilgamesh and this type of devil.
Yeah.
Fight, and they see they're both the same, powerful. And they realize that they can construct more, having these different polarities.
Miss that game. They can construct more by doing what?
Yeah, by having these different polarities.
Yeah.
They construct. That's the way things are built in this hologram.
Are you
but
saying
it's
that
not
the
like
war.
One side is bad and one side is evil. They're just different polarities.
Right, and you're saying they don't see the polarity aspect. They see each other as good or bad. Is that what you're saying?
No. On the contrary, they see it's not about who's good and who's bad.
Who sees that?
Gilgamesh and the devil.
Oh, they see it. And what do?
They
start fighting?
Each other. And they recognize each other just as a different polarity.
Well, is that a happy ending?
Well, that's the thing, that some things that seem bad, like radiation or Trump, may actually be helping for constructing.
Right.
And bringing forward the new environment. So
you're saying that's the message of the Gilgamesh epic, that they realized they were the same thing.
Well, they're just part of the Gilgamesh epic.
Well, okay. It's a subplot. Yeah, because Thompson writes about the Gilgamesh epic, about how it's the movement from the matriarchal society to the patriarchal. So Inanna, and note in the documentary Secrets in Plain Sight, that he mentions Inanna as the background to Isis. Everything's all about Isis, but at one point he says Inanna. Well, that's where you read Thompson. Thompson does a lot on Inanna as a representative of the matriarchy, and she does well in the first battle, but in the second battle, Gilgamesh, I think, beats her. And that's the beginning of the male warrior society's takeover, symbolized by the hero Gilgamesh. But Gilgamesh himself is rather defeated because he goes to the meditating guru out in the wilderness someplace and fails to develop himself on that level. So he goes back to being a public hero, but privately miserable. That's Thompson's take on the Gilgamesh transition from matriarchy to patriarchal warrior cultures. And Inanna is a figure in that.
He also mentioned many different myths of how the feminine fell and Inanna descended into the Nether.
Yeah, it's clearly loud. Your phone's a little scratchy. but just positioned right. So, yeah, there's many myths. Inanna goes is forced to go in the underground, right? Ah! Did her phone get broken? Are you there, Bert?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe her phone broke. Yeah, the Inanna going forced into the underground becomes, I think, Penelope and Demeter in Greek mythology. So, we're going to have to reconnect. So, let me just play a little music. First of all, let's just see who's here. Alyssa is here, or Nate. Are you enjoying the conversation, guys? Alyssa.
Yeah, Nate. I just hopped in. Yeah, it's Nate.
So you're not up in what we're talking about.
Nope. I just parachuted into what I have no idea where I landed yet.
Oh, okay. And Corbin has. Did you want to say something, Corbin?
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Corbin?
Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Hello.
Would you like some Zappa song?
Would Bobby like to something?
What did you say?
Would Bobby like to listen to Zappa song?
Yes. Here we go. We'll be right back. Okay, are you there, Roxy?
Great stuff. Great stuff.
Bob,
I think
that?
I blipped it
off. What was that Zappa song, Bob?
That's a new one.
What's the name of that?
It's a new one. I don't awesome. Know it that well. Might have heard it years ago. It's called Occam's Razor. You know that philosophical point? Abelard, I think, wrote about Occam's Razor. Yeah, what a great song. What do you think of that, Corbin? Ooh. Do you know it, Corbin?
No, first time I've heard it before. I've heard the semi-length of some other Zappa material, but that's just, you know, out of random, you know.
Well, I think I brought Roxy over, but I think I disconnected her accidentally. Are you there, Roxy? No, so I got to call her again. So I'm going to play the beginning of Occam's Razor. It has a great beginning, once again.
Set my ball.
Now, Corbin, I opened the show with this. Dig this song, 1965.
Hi.
Going back again to see that girl I left behind me when I went out to see this great big world. I hope that you feel the same about me as you did before I went out to see this great big world. I know I love that girl, and I hope that you still want me to be the one and only guy. Going back to see that girl I love, and I'm so happy I could cry. Going back to take her in my arms again and tell her that I'm not going to leave her anymore. I love her so much, I just can't wait until I touch her, and I'm not going to leave her anymore.
Don't you love the harmony? Very nice harmony.
Yes, I love it. And the production quality is so, that frame is just, that is really, wow.
Great.
That one and only guy.
Going back to see that girl I love, and I'm so happy I could cry. Looking forward to the day when she will love me in her way. All day long I sit and pray. Someday soon I'll hear her say.
Now, here's a question, man.
Looking forward to that day when she will love me in her way. All day long I sit and pray. Someday soon I'll hear her say. You have been away so long, I've missed you so much since you're gone, and now you are standing at my door. I love you so much, I just can't wait until I touch you, dear. And now you are standing at my door. Please let me take you in my arms, sweet you, baby, and the mind, the tears that's in my eyes. Cause darling, you come back to me. I'm so happy I could cry. I'm so happy I could cry.
happy I can cry.
Okay. So that's called So Happy I Can Dance, which Rip would later appear on Lumpy Gravy and in a much different orchestrated version or arranged version. No, what I was wondering if that was the Wrecking Crew with Glenn Campbell, Tommy Tedesco, because the production quality. Yeah, that's a pretty good production. It's a little bit above Zappa's budget at the time. So he might have been able to sneak through, or they might have snuck him in and said, hey, I got this song. It's not a big hit, but it's 50s doo-wop. Who knows? Here, cut it, kid. Get it in here and, you know, bam. And they probably knocked it out in one hit, one session.
Right. He knew all those people.
Of course. Glenn Campbell was...
No, listen, he lists Carol Kaye and maybe Tedesco, I'm not sure, but Carol Kaye is listed on Freakout as people that influenced him.
And 200 Marcells.
But the thing is Zappa, he really knows the music industry. He's been trying to market his songs for a few years. He goes around and visits Art LeBeau and these different record guys. And you can't get anything out there. And this thing is saying it's dated 1965. It might have been recorded before Freakout or during Freakout, but just well made. Beautiful harmony.
That's what
there.
I'm saying. You know, like way too
Could
much.
Have been the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the Wrecking Crew. I guarantee it was, man. And they just said,
well, if I go to one of the Zappa scholarly sites, they do everything. They probably got the name of the musicians
on. Let's throw it out there. Let's solve this one.
Yeah.
You know, Dennis Sims, and what was the other gentleman that used to do Society Pages? Remember?
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but yeah, the main guy at Society Pages. Let's see. Bring up Zappa. Links to Zappa, and this is all part. We're doing a Zappa special tonight, so find a great Zappa archive. Earlier Zappa archive.
If you're doing a Zappa special, you got to play at least a few minutes of the Purple Lagoon.
Yeah,
Zappa live in New York, the Purple Lagoon.
Right, 1976 album. Just trying to find the best archive. Okay, Zappa archive, and see if they give. That particular song. Gee, that one got knocked out.
Yeah, it's strange because sometimes some of the Ryko Disc Zappa tunes didn't get released on disc, which is crazy.
Right.
I guess, you know, it wasn't financially viable for them to do some of it. Like even something like Gregory Peck, where you could probably pull that up them faster than the Purple Lagoon, you know?
Yeah.
Studio 10, Gregory Peck, there we go. Let's go with that for a minute. Yeah.
Okay, so putting that song in on one Zappa. Well, they didn't get any words. Sites, I'm so happy I... Oh, spelled it wrong. I'm so happy I could cry.
Now, you do know the name of Frank Zappa's very first rock band, correct?
You mean from the 50s? The Blackhearts?
There you go. Bobby got it. Yes, you did, Bobby.
I got it.
Wolfman Jack, Midnight Special, revealed that. I said, yeah, special. Well, we had a group called the blackouts, me and my brother, just literally because we drink peppermint schnapps and blackout.
He was blackout from the peppermint schnapps drink. So they named the band after it. And this was an integrated band, 1956 or so. Dangerous.
Yeah.
They got beat up all the time just by going and walking around and going to a gig. The local white guys, the white caucus would get identity crisis.
They'd
try to retrieve an old image, pre-integrated America. War would break out right there in Lancaster. But clicking that song in title, nothing came up on that site.
That's what I'm saying. It's odd. Ryko Disc has pulled some of these and released some of them. And how about there was one I was thinking on 200 Motels that was really it's an orchestra. The Soup. The girl, he wants him to bring him some soup. Just a cold. The lamb wants to eat some broth. Broth, broth. Pay attention to the rhythms and what he's saying.
Yes.
Tentacle! Yes. The girl would like some broth. Can you bring broth?
The girl would like the broth.
Yes. Tentacle after Tinseltown Rebellion, which he would revisit almost 20 years later in the 80s for Tinseltown Rebellion. I've never put that together until just now. Tinseltown from to Tinseltown Rebellion. He always has this animosity towards Tinseltown, and it's easy to understand why once you live here. Fucking assholes. Fucking assholes. Give me a goddamn fucking...
Okay, I'm looking up... I put it in. Can we get a history? Well, here's Kill Ugly Radio. Shit, they just have it as it appears on Joe's Corsage. Ah, good. Okay. It's a demo. Okay? It's a demo. And according to this, Zappa on guitar vocals, Jimmy Carl Black on drums, Ray Collins on vocals, tambourine, Roy Estrada bass, and Henry Vestine, who went on to form, what were they called? Canned Heat, guitar. So it is the Mothers, one of the earliest Mothers.
Oh, shit. They sound pretty freaking professional, and especially as, I guess, basically their manager at the time said, look, if you don't record it like this, you guys are fucked. He probably loaned them like $10 or $15 to record. Let's see if we can find this 200 Motels. The girl would like some broth. Tentacle. 200 Motels. Just look through the, she was, something about broth. That's all I meant. The title is something to that effect.
Yeah, this song, I'm So Happy I Could Cry, they're saying, is an early recording of the track later known as Take Your Clothes Off, on Lumpy Gravy, and we're on for the
you
money.
Can even right. That's, you can even take your clothes off when you dance. Well, there will come a time when everybody is too free and too free dancing, dancing, love, free dancing, love. There will come a time. Who cares if you're short too bold? There will come a time when you can take your clothes off even when you dance. Wah, 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 wah.
Tune in, Roxy. Can't you work with that? Can you work with that, Roxy?
I'm propelled by nebulous gas. Nebulous gas is coming. Methane just...
See what happens, Bert, when you let Corbin take over the microphone? did Roxy drop off again? Are you there, Roxy?
No.
Oh, you're here. Yeah, can you jam with Corbin? Is he your kind of musician?
No.
You can't do it? No. Roxy can sing with everybody. It's the biggest insult in your life, Corbin.
Really
Roxy can sing with everybody, but she can't sing with you. That should tell us all something.
Actually, that's a little bit retentive. I mean, I can play guitar. I ain't doing, I'll play it for you. You say. How about, would you like some broth?
Okay, let's play some. I'll play some.
Play the song Tinselcock. The girl wants some broth, I believe is the title.
The girl wants to fix him some broth, and I will bring it up for you to enjoy.
There we go.
Let's see. The regular Zappa fans will say, finally, Bob's getting to some Zappa music and stop sitting around fucking making up theories about idiotic McLuhan. This will be the Zappa fan addicts will love this episode of our Zappa series, if I can get it working. I gotta find that song. Blip it out somehow.
You'll need to get done at work. Come over. We just need to slow the motion.
Now that's Rihanna. I brought up the Rihanna thing. Okay. We're doing well here.
Bring it, Rihanna.
Yeah, we're going to bring it on. Okay, here we go. The girl wants to fix him some broth. 1971. I'll get it going at the proper beginning.
The girl wants to fix him some broth.
Tinselcock.
Do you do tinselcock?
Would you like some broth?
Some nice soup.
Some hot broth.
Small dogs in it. Dog broth?
Hot broth?
You like? How do you like it? Debris broth bread and the ever popular ice cream. European version.
Making fun of choice. He goes, which? He ends by saying, which do you choose? The freedom of choice in a consumer paradise.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, a friend of mine was a great, really excellent jazz musician. They introduced me to Max Roach and, for some reason, like, sounds like he was eating a lot of acid at the time. And I was like, oh, no. I mean, because essentially I've seen all the, they have the orchestral lead sheets to it, and it's very difficult to, like, the rhythms and the arrangements and the orchestra. I mean, it takes 20 people besides Zappa to write out all these parts, you know, and he did chide the British Philharmonic for being like fathers of punk rockers, you know, because they've shredded their like suits, and he got charged by the tuxedo company, and it just killed his profit. I mean, the whole thing was just. And what's right. Very strange about it is there's a scene in there where Keith Moon is playing a nun, and he keeps eating pills and floating on a bed. Well, unfortunately, 3 years later, you'd be dead from the exact same thing. It was like, oh, my goodness. That's
right.
Wow.
Now, you were making a point just before there. What was your first point? What song is Tinseltown Rebellion in? Prefigures?
Tinseltown Rebellion is an album that came out in 83.
I know the album.
Yeah.
But you said there was something in some music, Tinseltown.
The song you just played, if you want to play it again, the girls all go, the sopranos, the altos, and the tenors, they all go, Tinseltown, my baby, Tinseltown.
The girl wants to give him some broth. It's in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It comes out 10 years later, the album, Tinseltown Rebellion. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We got to get back to what we were talking about.
Okay. I mean, that's complete the synchronicity. What was the central scrutinizer, synchronistic utility muffin workshop stuff.
Yeah. No, that's very good. Nice contribution there, Corbin. And we will probably come back to you, but we got a limited amount of time, and only a half hour or so for Roxy has to go. So, Bert, what were we talking about when Roxy got knocked off? It was a good theme. Do you remember, Roxy?
Sorry?
Do you remember what we were talking about when you got knocked off? There was something we were going
it's
into.
It's about the descent of the female.
Ah, the matriarchy versus the patriarchy? All right,
yeah.
That reminds me. So then we go back to the history of harmonization and the stages in Thompson's chart. So he has, you know, kindergarten is Ramapithecus, pre-hominid evolution. Then you start to get to what's called Australopithecus to Homo erectus. That's grade one. So he has here evolution from animism of presence to persons, personified objects, and musical instruments. So you're starting to get Homo sapien, Homo erectus culture. The first phase, when you're celebrating the ape phase of hominization. Are you there, Bert? Did I delete Bert?